friends, and welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It is the end of the year. We are drawing 2024 to a close. And although we did a whole episode about how I have not been reading as much or, you know, whatever, my weird reading vibes this year, I have to say there have been some good ones.
There have been some bangers.
There have been some pod-style bangers this year. So we thought we could not let the year end without us doing a classic Books of the Year ep.
Just a cheeky little recap.
Yeah, a little rehash.
Our best reads.
Our faves. So we have each chosen 5 books that we would like to present to the pod to create a top 10 for you. We will begin with the book that we sort of fought over slightly to have on our own list. So even though this is officially from my top 5, we will consider it the pod fave book of the year.
Yeah, it's a mutually agreed it should be on the top 10.
Yes. So that book is All Fours by Miranda July.
What a fucking banger.
I'm so hyped that this book is in the world. It's my doppelganger of this year in that, like, I just find that I want to talk to everyone about it.
By which you mean, not that it is you in book form, but that it is the equivalent of the book Doppelganger
the
by
book
Naomi
Doppelganger by Naomi Klein. Where it's like, if you've read it, I want to talk to you about it. If you haven't read it, I want to tell you to read it.
Had you read any Miranda July before?
If I had, I'd read Me and You and Everyone We Know a very long time ago.
That is a movie.
What is the book that has... What's the short story collection?
Oh, No One Belongs Him or This.
That's those two titles to me are so interchangeable.
I see it. Yeah. Same vibe.
And two
same
also
flavor.
Long. So yeah, if I have read one, it was that and ages ago. So essentially the answer is no.
You have to read First Bad Man for a start.
Which is interesting because I feel like when it came out, people were like lukewarm about it, but maybe they're just like the wrong people.
Well, also I feel like, so I didn't particularly enjoy the short story collection when I first read it. I think it was just too, like, I don't want to say zany, but I'm going to say zany.
You can say zany.
It was just a little bit zany for me and I didn't really get it. I didn't like lock into it and I'm looking forward to rereading it now though, because I feel like I understand a little bit more about where she's coming from as a writer. And The First Bad Man, it's just great. It's just a banger. Like, it reminds me of a lot of stuff that's now very popular. Like,
interesting.
Really reminds me of, like, Melissa Broder's kind of work. Like, these kind of very over-the-top wild women behaving in strange ways. And that's also exactly what I loved about All Fours. I don't think you're going to like it more than All Fours.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth it.
Given I liked it so much, it's worth seeking that out. For some reason I was just like, oh no, people are not vibing with that, I'm not going to read it. Whereas now, because I'm such an All Fours stan, I'm going to read it. So
should we nutshell it?
We should nutshell, rather than just endlessly talking about how much we liked it, we should at least explain to you what it is. So it's about an artist, unnamed, right?
I believe unnamed, yeah.
Unnamed lady artist who's sort of mid-40s, has a young child, and departs on a road trip to drive from the West Coast to the East Coast for some kind of, like, creative...
She's got business in New York. Yeah.
And she's driving on her own. But she, for some reason, stops in a town just outside where she lives and encounters a motel and then decides to just stay in the motel until she has to go back.
She encounters a man first
who is attached to this motel and therefore decides to stay in this motel until she is due back.
In like 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she does not do the road trip. She does not fulfill any of her professional obligations. And she stays in this motel where she has paid an astronomical amount of money for them to redecorate a room to exactly what she wants it to be. And has, like, a sort of fun, mad affair thing, fling, with this man. Which then sort of triggers other various, like, crises, revelations, whatever, in her life. Would you say that's a fair nutshell?
Perfect.
I loved it.
I think there's something about the fact that it's not... They do have an affair, but it's not an affair.
Mm.
It's, like, this incredibly... Because she's married, he's married... It's just this incredibly sexually charged kind of triste. Oh, she writes that kind of desire so well. And I think also, like, reading just, you know, a woman of the of in her mid-40s going through that. And it also kind of dips into pre-menopause.
Yeah,
and...
it's very, very much about perimenopause. Like, that's sort of part of the... But it does so much. Like, there's so many sort of surprising and, like, moving threads and directions. I'm thinking of, you know, without spoilers, the sort of musician figure... who keeps putting off meeting her. You know, she's meant to have a meeting with this musician and then keeps getting put off and put off and put off. And then the way that sort of resolves itself, I found very moving and delightful. There's almost every element of it, I was like, wow. Like, I did not know where that was going to go. Because when I started reading it, well, I say reading, I did it with my ear holes on Audible, and she does an incredible... It's Red Wine Ready July, and it is... I think that adds so much. That's I cannot recommend chic. It enough. I was like, I started listening to it because people had been so evangelical about it. And I was like, I don't know if I'm really up for like a road trip. I don't know if I can be bothered to go on a road trip.
And nor can she.
Exactly. And I was like, you know, all I had to do was listen like 20 minutes longer. And I found out she also could not be bothered to do a road trip. So it was delightful in that respect. But yeah, I loved it. I truly loved it. And I just feel like it's a real sort of... book that ladies are like bonding over, and it has a lot of stuff in it that, you know, I think the perimenopause stuff in particular is very interesting because that's clearly like underrepresented in fiction. Loved it.
Yeah, I read it on holiday and it was the perfect poolside read
because it's also so like immersive. Mad, you know, it's like a mad you're like on holiday and it's like you're just reading about a mad moment in someone's life.
If you can hear banging noises, it is the storm outside.
We're podding through a storm.
Oh, that sounds crazy. Anyway, so I do apologise, so there's nothing we can do about it. Next on the list. Okay, so now maybe I'll do one of mine.
Yeah, do one of yours.
So I'm going to pick, I've gone kind of alphabetical, so there are no specific order. So the first on my list is Private Rights by Julia Armfield.
Gorge.
Did you read it?
Do you know what? I haven't read it yet, but I should. I have a copy.
You should. I read, like, an early bound manuscript. So it wasn't the best reading experience because the nature of these bound manuscripts is that they just fall apart. Mm-hmm. So it got to a point where I had maybe 40 pages left and I was completely gripped. I was loving it. It was quite late. And I just thought, and it completely sprang apart. And I was like, I have to finish this now because I can't read this on the tube. I can't be flinging my, like, loose sheafs of paper around. So I just pounded through the second half, like, in one go. But I absolutely loved it. It's kind of about like the strange, like, ordinariness that the extraordinary can take on when we adjust to the weird, if that makes sense. So it's like the end of the world is nigh. This constant rain has become the everyday. London is flooded. Like the whole of the UK is just covered in water. And these three semi-estranged sisters come together following the death of their father, who was a very famous architect who designed this incredibly expensive, ridiculous house that was designed to be able to, like, stand up against all this, like, really extreme weather. And it's kind of, like, about grief, and it's about queer love, and the way that we find strange forms of comfort in times of distress. It's a really difficult one to nutshell beyond, like, that blurb of like three sisters, dead dad.
Well, I heard it was like queer King Lear at the end of the climate crisis.
Yeah, that works.
I don't know. I haven't read it, but like, would you say that's a fair nutshell?
I see King Lear gets tossed around a lot. But yeah, I think she's such a special writer. I remember my first like taste of Julia Armfield's work. I believe we were together at the Picador showcase, and she read a little extract of Formerly Feral.
Yeah.
A short story about a young woman who finds herself stepsister to a wolf called Helen. And I have never forgotten, I knew immediately that this was someone who was completely insane, who was incredibly talented and surprising in the worlds that she creates. And she has consistently
lived up to it
and is getting better and better. So yeah, Private Rights was just an absolute joy. And that was the first book I read this year.
What a way to begin.
Number one.
I read such a shit book as my first book of the year. It was so boring. It was like a non-fiction book that I thought was going to be like really interesting, and it was boring. Can't believe that happened to me.
Clown behaviour.
You're absolute clown.
Really set. No wonder you've had such a shit reading year. You set yourself up.
It really didn't bode well. Peachy looks so cute.
Oh, my little dog is asleep in the room with us, and she's just being
so good.
Gorgeous. She's being silent.
So my next entry into my top five is The Safe Keep by Yael van der Woudem. I think it is pronounced like that. Or similar. It's Dutch. Do you know this book?
I recognise the cover when I googled it. I haven't read it. I don't know. I don't think we've talked about it before.
We've never talked about it before. And I think it's more... I'd heard people say how good it was, and then it was more on my radar because it was on the Booker shortlist. Which is not something that I usually, like, engage with. You know, that does not guide my reading choices. I'm not very, like, Booker adjacent. Also, you are.
No, right? Not really. I mean, I read Orbital this year because it was really short and it won. But
was it good?
I thought it was so beautiful. It's very brief, and I think it's basically a novel that says, isn't it strange how we're all kind of the same, but there's all these systems that keep us apart.
Yeah.
You know, but it's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful short read, which I enjoyed inhabiting.
Okay.
But it didn't make it onto my top five.
Whereas, yeah, this did not win, but was on the shortlist. And it is set in sort of mid-century Netherlands, and it is about a woman called Isabel who lives on her own in a big house that she used to live in with her mother and two brothers, and the brothers have left and the mother has died. So she is now on her own. It's just her and this servant that comes and helps her with the house. One of her brothers gets a new girlfriend who Isabel finds sort of very, like, gauche. She sort of looks down on her. Isabel is not a particularly sympathetic person in the, you know, she's not a sort of nice protagonist that you're like, oh yes, what a nice world I'm inhabiting with you. So brother gets a new girlfriend called Eva. Brother goes to London to work for an extended period of time, and it's just decided that Eva will come and stay in the house with Isabel, that Eva cannot be left on her own. She will come and stay in the house with Isabel. Initially, Isabel is very, very hostile to her, really doesn't want her there, and then things evolve. Evolve spicily. And then it takes a completely different turn about two-thirds of the way through, which I will not, go too deeply into, but I was obsessed.
Okay, do you think would I like it?
I think you would really like it.
Me specifically?
You specifically. Yay, okay. I think it would really appeal to. I think, don't let the fact that it's from, like, the past put you off.
I don't like the past.
The past is boring.
No, I do.
But this past is really interesting.
How back in the day are we talking? Like, back in the day, or just, like, a little bit back in the day?
Like, the 50s, maybe.
Okay.
So it's not that far back.
The way that we... Imagine anyone who... This is the first episode they listen to. Talking as though historical fiction of any degree is, like,
disgusting,
so on a slug.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, horrendous. But, yeah, I think you would particularly like this. And, so, yeah, it's a past that you sort of... You get that it's in, like, the sort of shadow of the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot say that I really knew much about, like, what life was like in the Netherlands during...
Sure, yeah.
World War II. And, yeah, it is phenomenal. I loved it. And would strongly recommend to the pod in particular. I think it's, like, very pod adjacent in lots of ways.
Man, there's just so many books, aren't there?
There are so many books.
I know that's, like, such a dumby thing to say, but, like, there are so many books, and you just think, like, we're going to do a Books for 25 episode for you all next. And this is, like, we've got, like, 25 books on there? That's probably half of my reading for next year already. And you just think, where am I going to find the time?
Well, at least you've already read some of the books for next year.
That is actually true. I forgot that. I've read about half the ones on this list. Anyway, my point was going to be that the next one that I'm going to bring up is one that you recommended specifically to me. And I've had, not only did I have a copy already, I actually had four copies.
Normal.
Because I think the publisher knew that I would really like it. So they sent me an early proof. They sent me two early proofs. Because sometimes you end up on different people's lists. Like, yeah. The editor sent me one, the publisher sent me one. They also then sent me a finished copy. And then I discovered that I actually had a beautiful hardback version of it.
Given to you by who?
Given to me by Camilla Grudova.
Gorge.
As a thank you for chairing an event for The Cold Serpent. Anyway, the book is called The Fate of Mary Rose.
By Caroline Blackwood.
And you know what, man? I honestly feel like, despite having four copies, it was like the universe was really telling me, bitch, read this book. It was only you looking in the eye and being like, no, you would really like it. that I decided to prioritize it. And also by that point, it had come out, so I wasn't going to be able to like offer a blurb or like help the campaign. I read it and oh my god.
Isn't it so good?
Loved it so much. It's so grim. It's so dark. So basically, I don't want to give away too much because I found the way that the plot peels like layers of onion really satisfying.
It's quite hard to sort of figure out what the story is.
Yeah, so basically, so the central Mary Rose is not even... this is really hard. Okay, it's about a girl who goes missing. A little girl goes missing from a very quiet village.
In Kent.
In Kent. And it's told from the perspective of a man whose wife becomes completely obsessed with this case, the missing child.
In the same village as her.
In her very same village. And, you know, protecting her daughter, who is the eponymous Mary Rose. And just slowly, the more you learn about their setup and their situation, and it's just so dark. It's so well written. It's so well plotted and well paced and so incredibly creepy. It has really inspired me to try and read more of these, like, forgotten mid-century... Well, I say mid-century, actually. I think it was written in the early 80s.
Yeah, this is actually 81. Early 80s. But it had this weird timeless quality. I think maybe because it was set in, like, a rural area, I felt like it could have sort of been from lots of different
Yeah,
times.
I mean, it felt to me very, like, very Daphne du Maurier. And maybe that's also why it felt... Maybe she was inspired by writers who were writing just a little bit earlier than her.
And Shirley Jackson.
Shirley Jackson. Patricia Highsmith to a degree. And have you read any Celia Fremen? Yeah.
Celia Fremen, I don't know if I have. I've read Celia Dale, which I feel like is in the similar...
They're all in the same
horrible
bucket.
Little water. Yeah. Horrible little bucket.
And that
of
is a bucket I want to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're very blessed to be in this moment where a lot of these, you know, Celia Dale is getting like a glamorous reissue every year. I hope there is more Caroline Blackwood. She is in herself a really interesting person.
There is another one coming from Virago called The Stepsister.
Okay, well, I'm going to read it.
Can't remember, it's coming next year.
You'll get four copies, one of those for me. Maybe I'll get a copy of my own, who knows. But I found it like really quite subversively horrible.
Oh my god, it's so horrible.
And it's a bad vibe.
And you spend most of the book believing that you know what's gonna happen. And it just really stomach turning. And I think like to be able to keep me engaged, even though I thought I knew exactly what the revelation was going to be. I thought I knew how the book was going to end. And I remained completely gripped, even though it was horrendous. And it's just so skillfully breadcrumbed, the way the plot skillfully breadcrumbed throughout. I think, who was it? What's your local bookshop called again?
Cocktail.
Whoever runs the...
Freddie.
Gorgeous Freddie. On the socials was like, it was... The only thing that Freddie can seem to say about this book is, I'm glad it's over.
Yes.
I'm glad I'm no longer reading it. Whereas I want to read more things like that.
It's so good. I'm really glad that you heeded my recommendation and read it. Because I was like, I know, it's not just that like it's a good book, therefore you would like it. But like it so appeals to all of the things that you are interested in.
Also, I think I found it very inspirational because, you know, Death of a Bookseller, I had a dual narrative. My next novel... which is unannounced, but we're all friends, has multiple perspectives. It's got quite a complicated structure. And it was just so satisfying reading a novel that had just one voice, one timeline. Everything was happening
in the
concurrently.
Moment.
There was, they do a little bit of dipping back into the past to like learn how, you know, the husband and wife met, that kind of thing. But
it's always from the perspective of like the dude now thinking back, not
exactly.
Like we're
no
in the
flashbacks.
Moment. No, yeah, it's like all told from the perspective of this guy thinking about how he got to the position he is
exactly,
now in,
yeah.
And what is going on right now. And yeah, it's very masterful. What a great writer.
Good times.
So, and much like The Fate of Mary Rose and All Fours, another book that we could have communally put on our either of our top fives, but I have taken for my list, was The Coin by Yasmin Zaher. Which we never did a full episode on, or anything like that. We don't really do that anymore.
I think the thing is that when we both read it, we were in a fallow period of the pod.
Yeah.
And we both kept saying, oh, yeah, well, no, we'll do an episode of The Coin. We'll definitely do an episode of The Coin. But then by the time we were actually ready to start recording, I'd read it like 6 months ago. You'd read it at the beginning of the year or whatever. Like, it wasn't fresh in our memories.
But it is great.
What a banger.
So The Coin by Yasmin Zahir. We have sort of talked about it on and off on the pod, but I will recap it for you in case it sounds captivating. It is about a young, beautiful, glamorous Palestinian woman who teaches at a prestigious boys' private school and sort of likes going her own way in her job and getting the boys to do sort of slightly strange things. It's about her as like a Palestinian person. It's about her with sort of compulsions and fixations on certain bodily things. And it's also about a Birkin reselling pyramid scheme.
Yeah, which I will say was in all of the blurbs I read before I read the book. And I wasn't particularly enchanted by that. And then when you actually read the book, it's actually a very small part of...
Yeah, because I hadn't read the blurbs before I read it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I guess it is also about that. But it's to me, that is
like
not
a
the main...
thing that
yeah.
happens. It's really more about this character who is like lacking a sense of home.
Yeah.
Like she cannot return to Palestine. She's trying to set roots in New York, but struggling because she is just such an unusual person, kind of haunted by various elements of her past. And again, like, she makes some fucking wild decisions.
Yes.
And that's what I'm here for. I'm here for women who are making insane choices.
Yeah. I think something that I like... I don't know, I think I may be sort of a bit over, like... I don't know how to describe it, but things... I feel like there are two kinds of, like, women doing mad things books. And there's one kind of them that I could happily not read another one. Whereas both... All Fours and The Coin are that in a way that I find so delightful. I cannot articulate what that difference is, but I know it when I see it. And I feel like you also know it when you see it.
I do, but I don't know how frank you want to be on the pod. But I think the difference for me is that in both All Fours and The Coin, we have something like a character study in which the character's psychological journey plays out through the plot and it's all happening kind of in real time. And they're both, even though they're both kind of slightly wild and sometimes even surreal, they're still kind of entrenched in the real world.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't want women turning into dogs or women turning into things. I don't know, that's like what I'm not here for, you know? Do you know what I mean? I don't want that.
I think also there's a flattening has occurred for me with the term unhinged women.
Yes.
Which... 2 years ago, I would have described that perfectly articulated, my taste in books. But I kind of feel like talking about books in terms of theme has superseded talking about them in terms of, like, genre or like, style. So it's not enough for me to just say, oh, there's a woman in it who goes nuts. I'm like, okay, cool, but how?
Well, it's the new domestic noir. Like, at one time, that was a thing where you would be like, okay, well, I like that, so I will read that. And then the market just got so flooded that it was like, oh, well, actually, a lot of, you know, 80% of them are now bad.
Yeah, or, like, everything is being flattened to fit into this very narrow box because it's what's selling. But it's not even necessarily what's selling. It's just what people on TikTok are making content about. And it kind of becomes a snake eating its own tail where, like, everyone's kind of scrabbling for a book that they can try and go viral with, and we're kind of losing, I just feel like we're kind of losing exactly the same with the kind of the way the thriller market went. I'm kind of losing my ability to figure out what's actually going
to
really hit the spot for me, and what, like, and that's why I didn't read Melissa Broder for so long, because I didn't realize that it's actually, like, the language is really rich and literary and the worlds in which her characters inhabit are really rounded and interesting. They all got so flattened that I just assumed that it wasn't going to be my vibe.
I hear you, man.
A mistake, that would have been.
So that was The Coin by Yasmin Zahir.
Okay, next on my list. So The Coin definitely would have been on my list as well, but I got to be greedy and let you have it so I could squeeze more in. And speaking of greedy, the next one on my list is She's Always Hungry by Eliza Clark.
Is this our only short story collection?
It's my only short story collection. Yeah, you don't have one.
I don't have one. Okay.
It's been a while, I think, since I've read a collection that I've really, really loved. Like, I've read so many really great ones over the years, but, like, for me, this is, like, the perfect album. It mixes horror, it mixes sci-fi, and then more kind of contemporary stories set in the real world. Eliza Clark is a maniac. Her sense of humour is really dark and weird, and to me, very appealing. I've now read the collection twice, because I read it way back when, to offer a blurb, and then we did an event together. I chaired one of her launch events during her launch month, rather. So I reread it, and I loved it even more the second time. And yeah. You haven't read it, I presume.
I have not read it. I've only read her novels. I haven't read the short story.
Have you read both then? Have you read Boy Parts as well?
No, that was a lie. I have not. I've read Penance.
I think you did, yeah. I mean, she's one of my favourite authors, but I also feel very privileged. I can say she's a friend. I feel like She's Always Hungry is really interesting because some of the stories were written pre-Boy Parts.
Mm.
And then the most recent one, I think, was finished last year. So you've got this real span of work that feels slightly more like juvenilia, although it doesn't, not to be, you know, disparaging, just written from a kind of place of less experience, right up to, like, yeah, the latest story, which is, her voice has kind of settled into itself. And yeah, there's also the sci-fi stuff. Like, I realised I used to read quite a lot of sci-fi when I was younger. I used to be more open to it, I guess. Yeah. Whereas, there's a lot of books. Sci-fi
there's
isn't
too many
my
books.
Fav. Yeah. It's not my fav, so I never read it. And I had such a nice time reading her absolutely horrendously gross sci-fi stories.
Well, I feel like if you're going to read any sci-fi, you might as well read it from the mind of someone that you already find, like, compelling, intelligent, entertaining.
Yeah, someone who I feel I'm in safe hands with.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I should definitely read it. I know I should, because I like Penance so much. Yeah, I've never got round to Boy Parts, even though I know I'm the last girlie in the world.
I really think you should read it.
Cool, I will.
I mean, I know I've said this on the pod so many times, Boy Parts quickly became one of my favourite books. And again, it's a good example of a book about a woman who makes really mad choices and does really extreme things. But the psychological journey that this character goes on makes total sense.
Mm.
You're really there with her. And yeah, she's insane. I love it.
We love insane.
We do love insane.
So my next entry is The Echoes by Evie Wilde. Is this a person you know?
No.
Is this a person whose name you recognise?
Yes.
Okay, because I had not read anything by her. I'd, like, seen the books by her. Like, I was sort of aware of them. People I know read them. I had not read any. So there was one a few years ago called The Bass Rock. Do you remember this? Yeah. So I've always been sort of dimly aware of her work. And I saw a lot of people whose opinions I'm interested in talking about this book called The Echoes. And I read it, and I absolutely loved it. So to go in with, like, I had no knowledge of her as an author or what this book was going to be about. I went in completely cold. And it opens with a man who sort of has just realised that he is dead and is observing his girlfriend as a ghost. And it is not only that, it's a sort of multi-POV book that's sort of, it's got so much going on, and it's quite hard to explain in a way that maybe will make this not a compelling explanation, but it's about this, like, young Australian woman in London who has the dead boyfriend, who is a ghost. It's about her growing up in this patch of land in sort of rural Australia called The Echoes. It's about her relationship with her sister. It's about this guy that lives on the same land that she lives on with her parents. It's like there are so many sort of bits of the book. And it's not a particularly long book, so she sort of does this with, like, mad economy. And it made me think I should read more Australian things. That is, I think, you know, maybe it's so far away. Maybe we don't get all the books from Australia.
We definitely don't get, to my knowledge anyway, as much Australian fiction and New Zealand fiction as you might think, considering you don't have to translate it.
Sidebar, Evie Wilde does live in the UK.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's, you know, but I just feel like I don't read about Australia.
But you know what I mean? Considering there's no translation delay, like, although maybe I'm speaking in total ignorance and we actually get fuck tons, but it's just not in genres that I necessarily read or notice. But
indeed. But I was just, completely entranced. I loved it. I found it so, like, compelling. It's like sort of semi-literary, you know, it's like literary, but it's not, like, impenetrable. I found it completely engaging, very hard to explain, and strongly recommend. I think for a lot of our listeners, if it's been on their radar and they're like, oh, should I read that? I'd be like, yes, you should read that.
Treat yourself.
What's your next one?
Okay, so my next one is quite rogue. I really did some soul searching, and then I was like, fuck it, I think it's extraordinary and I'm going to include it. I've picked The Alphabetical Diaries by Sheila Hetty.
Which I have not read, but I'm a big fan of hers and have read, I think, everything else she has written. So is this the sort of reordered fragmentary?
Yeah, so this is the only thing of hers I've read. And she basically took 10 years, like a decade's worth of diaries, alphabetized them, and then trimmed them right down to make it like a more kind of narrow volume. And I just thought it was absolutely sensational. It reminded me of lots of non-narrative things that I have really enjoyed in my life. So what was the name of the critic? A critic made this connection, which I completely forgot about. And then as I was reading the book, I made the same connection. It kind of reminded me of that art installation, the movie called The Clock.
Yes, I know exactly.
Is it Christopher McCauley, I want to say? Something like that?
I know, I've seen the installation, but I cannot tell you.
It reminds me of that, where you're just, so for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it was this project where someone edited together from a huge volume of different movies, like every single minute of a 24-hour day. So the piece lasts for 24 hours and you're just being kind of constantly showing these really short clips from different movies from all over the world.
Where a clock is being shown.
Or where they're saying the time.
Yeah.
Right? It kind of reminded me of that, there's no narrative to it, but every now and again, lines flow and make sense. And I found it a really strange and special reading experience. I read it very slowly because it's not one that you need to chug through. I also feel like you could literally pick it up and just read any page every so often. It doesn't matter. There's no narrative to follow. But yeah, I just thought it was a really wild project, incredibly self-indulgent. I think if you're listening to this description and you're thinking, God, that sounds like a load of shit, don't even bother then, because you're not going to enjoy it. If anything that I'm saying, though, is making you feel a little bit intrigued, I really encourage you to just check it out.
I feel like I should, given that I've liked her other stuff, and she is someone whose, you know, brain and world I'm interested in. I will at some point give it a go.
One day.
Life is long.
Yeah.
So my final entry on my top five is James by Percival Everett, which was a late entry, which I read just in case. So I think I've mentioned it on the reading update episode where I was like, look, there's all these books that I just haven't got around to, and I know that I want to read them and I'm just not reading them. And that was one that I specifically named in that episode. And I thought, I need to read it before we do our Books of the Year episode, just in case I do want to include it. And so I prioritised reading that and I loved it. And here it is on our Books of the Year episode. Have you ever read Huckleberry Finn? Do you know that bitch?
I know her, but I have never read her.
Well, yeah, me either. Like, I just think it's one of those things that, to an American mind, it is unthinkable to have reached adulthood without having read it.
Yeah.
It's so, like, intrinsic to the, you know, American youth or whatever. I don't know. But this is... And so Huckleberry Finn is a little white boy character who has sort of scrapes and adventures, sometimes with an enslaved person called Jim. And James by Percival Everett is about what was going on in one of the Huckleberry Finn books, but from the point of view of that same character who is called James. And almost everything that happens in the Huckleberry Finn book is also in James, but from the point of view of James. And then all the bits where, like, they get separated, like their raft breaks apart and they get separated or whatever, and you see what James was up to. And I saw a review that described it, the world of the book, as like the Truman Show, where all of the sort of the black people have been creating this sort of fictional world for the white people. And so it's about the sort of interiority of the black characters and how, like, they speak differently when it's just them on their own, and then they sort of snap back into slave mode, essentially, for the benefit of the white people when they encounter them. And I just think Percival Everett, actually a genius. I think he's so funny. I think he has so many interesting, thoughtful things to say. I love reading. He's just so much more fun than I thought he was going to be across, like, the three books of his that I have read.
Which ones have you read? The Trees?
Erasure and this.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the name Percival Everett makes him sound serious.
It's a serious name.
It is a serious name. And, like, if you see a picture of him, he looks quite serious. But he's just, like, a funny dude. I find, like, you know, satire is not really a genre that I naturally gravitate towards, but I would happily read him doing satire of anything. And yeah, James is so, yeah, it's short, it's sort of weirdly fun, but also like very dark. It's obviously a lot of it is about slavery and therefore is kind of depresso. But the reading experience, I just found so, like, you like zoom through the book. It is great.
I need to get on. Thing is, I think I was kind of put off by James specifically because I've never read Huckleberry Finn. So I was like, probably not for me.
Well, yeah, I had never read it and I don't care to read it. But
I guess just by like cultural osmosis, yeah. Like, you know the vibe.
Yeah, and all you need to know is that every time he is with Huckleberry in the book James, that is a bit from Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah.
And you don't even need to know that.
Yeah.
So I, going in, wasn't sure what it was going to be. I wasn't sure if it was like side adventures of this character that was in Huckleberry Finn, but it's not. It's literally like the same story, but recentered to the enslaved dude that is called Jim in Huckleberry Finn, but calls himself James. So yeah, that is my final rec, and I just loved it.
I've got one more to share with the class. My final book of the year is Clean by Alia Tribuco-Zero.
Yes, which has been on my horizon for a while, and yet? I still haven't read it. Do you have a fizzy cop?
Yes, I do. I've got a fizzy cop. I'll lend it to you.
Thank you.
Could brief moment just to enjoy fizzy cop.
I just came to me.
No, I can tell by the look in your eye. You were like, I just ad-libbed that.
I completely,
that was,
yeah.
Not, you didn't have that on the back burner.
That wasn't in my back pocket. That was in my front brain. Okay.
So Clean. So it is about a woman who is the kind of domestic help in a very kind of middle-class family. And in many ways, it reminds me of Lullaby. Mm. You learn right from the beginning that this woman is being held by presumably some kind of police, like law enforcement. And you know that the child of the family has ended up dead. So it, again, very similar to Lullaby by Leila Slimani, but executed very differently.
So this is also not written in English, right? This is a translated...
I believe it's translated.
And it's set in Latin America, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Chile. I don't think I made note of the translator, which I do apologise for. I will quickly Google it now. Side note, it's mad sometimes how hard it is to just find out who translated something. There we go, Sophie Hughes. So, translated by Sophie Hughes. I don't know if that's going to flow well. Should I say it again or just leave in all my rambling?
I'll figure it out.
I do feel bad that you edit this when I just go...
Mincing around. Verbal mincing.
Verbally mincing around. Going off piece. Making you do horrible cuts.
That's fine.
Anyway. So, Clean. Absolutely gripping. I really loved it. It's all about the kind of weird intimacy of being someone's cleaner, essentially. Being their kind of domestic help. Looking after their children. Cleaning their bed sheets, their underwear. Like, being very much within the home, but also not part of the family. Yeah. And yeah, I thought it was gripping, and I really enjoyed it. And I think it's probably one of the first absolute bangers I read over the year. And even though I think by the time the year has closed, there's been quite a few books that I literally couldn't put down. It's just one of the ones that really stuck with me as, like, a really good reading experience.
And, you know, there is also a sort of... In many cases, there is like a recency bias when you look at a list of things you've read and you remember the ones that you read the most recently and you're like, yes, I want to include that. And then the ones from earlier in the year are more of a distant memory. So the fact that you read it and it has retained.
Yeah, I think actually quite a few from my list though were earlier in the year, because one of the things I actually forgot to mention at the beginning of this episode, but I may as well say at the end, when we do our books of the year, we only look at books that were published this year or reissued this year. So they're not necessarily our top 10 overall reading experiences, but they're the best that was published from this year. And then towards the end of the year, I've mostly been reading stuff for next year.
Whereas because I had such a like weird, stupid reading pattern for the beginning of the year while we were not podding, I feel like my recency bias is sort of justified in that I've only really spent the second half of the year like reading the things that I felt like I wanted to be reading. Whereas, you know, at the beginning of the year I was doing a lot of reading for events, you know, where the books are all wonderful, but that sort of dictates what you're reading. And then, yeah, just for some reason, just not reading the stuff that I knew I wanted to read, which I'm now doing.
Should we do some quick honourable mentions?
Yeah, so the book that I had to bump off my top five to replace with James when I read it very recently was V13 by Emmanuel Carrère, who is the author of one of my all-time favourite non-fiction books, which I may return to and read again, called The Adversary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When I saw his name, I was like, what else did he write?
So he wrote The Adversary, which was a non-fiction book a few years ago about a man who had essentially been living a double life up to the point where he killed his family. Mm. And he also wrote, he's written a lot of things. He's a French journalist and non-fiction writer and fiction author. And I'm actually halfway through reading one of his novels at the moment, which is called The Moustache, which is about a man who shaves off his moustache and nobody notices, and it causes like a mad spiral, like his life like completely unravels after he shaves his moustache.
Immediately, that's so unrealistic, because when a man shaves his facial hair, it's alarming, like it's a jarring
well
experience.
Exactly, which is what he thought was going to happen, and then nothing happened. And I don't know whether it turns out he never had a moustache in the first place and he's mad. Yeah. I don't know where it's going, but like that is the premise of the book.
That sounds really fun, I love it.
Yeah.
I remember once my husband trimmed his beard too close and it was eerie.
Did he fly too close to the sun?
Like a muscle that's been shelled.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like peachy and weird.
Yeah. Naked mole rat. But V13, which is the book that I would like to honourably mention, is about the trial of the remaining people who survived potentially committing the terrorist attacks on Paris that happened, you know, the Eagles of Death Metal gig, uh-huh, and the Stade de France and the terrorist, you know, the sort of bars where on one evening three different locations were targeted. And it is his account of the trial of those people. I read it in French, so it was my only book I've read this year en français, which is better than no books, but it has recently been published in English. So I was not going to recommend it until I saw that it had actually come out in English. And it's really interesting. I just find him a great non-fiction writer. I enjoy him. Honourable mench?
Okay, I have a couple, just I ended up deciding not to do them because we've already discussed them on the pod recently. Yeah. Or they've already had so much attention, I don't think they necessarily, like, need the lift. So just to quickly reel them off, The Ministry of Time by Cullen Bradley, I absolutely loved it. Headshot by Rita Bullwinkle, I thought that was a banger. Big Day Energy by Bethany Rutter, came out this year, as did Slow Coach, both bangers. And then I had one more, what was it? Oh, Deadweight, Emmeline Klein.
Oh, yes.
Which, did you start reading
my book? I've read about half of it.
I'll give it to you, it's you right back where it was, I'll return it to you. To finish, that's a non-fiction book about eating disorders and just beauty standards, and it's just incredible. I really loved it. And then finally, Butter is the other honourable mention I'll toss out. Did I say Butter already?
No.
Butter, Asako Yuzuki, which I have actually ended up reading twice this year for various reasons that I won't go into, and I thought it was great.
Good.
That's it. That's all from me.
And on that note, we're done. Peace out for. Well,
let's call it.
Will we put out the 2025 look ahead this year? How many more weeks have we got?
Don't know.
Yeah, well either decide. This is or is not the last episode of the year.
Either way, it's you know, farewell but not goodbye.
Indeed. See you next time.
Bye!